is the Kenneth. Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call planet Earth. Thank you for being here. It is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. We're here because you have a right to know. You have a right to know that you can still get my book in ebook format until midnight tonight, Pacific Standard Time. It's called Gods in the Garden, and it will take you on a journey the likes of which you have never been on before. So if you have not yet availed yourself of that, be sure you do avail yourself of that. It's $9. At midnight tonight, shortly after midnight tonight, Pacific Standard Time, that will disappear from the site, and it will be gone for a long time. It's 2006 is when the book was published. And since then, this is the second time we've made it available as an ebook. But it's available right now, so be sure you avail yourself of that. Got an email from Ellis in Iowa that fits tonight's show. I want to share it with you. Dear Mr. Smith, I listen to your show nearly every night and have done so for about 5 years. I love the show, but you do confuse me sometimes, especially about NASA. Like last night, all in one show, you say they need to stop lying. Then you say we should double their budget, and then you say they should be shut down. My head is spinning. Can you clarify some of that for me? Yes, Ellis, I can, and I will tonight. What we are going to talk about tonight was already on the menu, but your email came just in time and just happens to fit with what we're going to be doing tonight. So, even though I cannot tell you that I designed this show especially to answer your email, I can tell you that this show will answer your email. So, you want to be sure and stay tuned for the whole show because it's going to take the whole show, I think, for you to see exactly where I'm coming from and what I'm talking about with NASA. And I want to go ahead and say I'm not an enemy of NASA. I'm really not. I just want NASA to live up to what its real potential is. That's all. But anyway, we'll deal with that tonight, and you'll get your answers. Tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, the 9th of April, in the members area, we're going to be televising once again the Gods in the Garden seminar that I did back in early 2007. So if you missed it last week, you get to see it this week. Just make sure if you're not a member that you get to be a member before in the morning. The K-Files begins going out tonight. It has an update, and a pretty important update, on Command Sergeant Major James Norton. So you want to be sure that you're subscribed to our newsletter. You do that by going to the website, click where it says K-Files, and subscribe. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, and this evening we're going to take a look at what some real experts say about some things. Right at the top of the show, I read to you an email from Ellis in Iowa. One of our listeners says he's been listening to us for about 5 years. So, Ellis, thank you for that. And I hope you're listening tonight, because this show, I think, is going to answer your questions. Ellis says, I confused him last night because, and he is correct in saying that I said NASA needs to stop lying to the people. I said they need that we ought to double their budget, and I also said we ought to close them down, all in one show. However, each of those statements was made within the context of certain conditions. And so, Ellis, you said your head is spinning. Grab your head and stop it from spinning now, because here come the answers. Some of the people... you know, a lot of times when we say NASA, I mean, you know, we're talking, it's a broad brush, and we're talking about the organization, and we're talking about their official statements that they make, and so forth. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we're talking about each individual person who works at NASA. There are some really dedicated scientists, fantastic scientists, very forward-thinking and progressive scientists that work for NASA. But it's the same when we talk, for instance, if you talk about CNN, and if you're criticizing CNN, what you have to, what you have to realize, I do apologize for that. We got a little allergy thing going on here. What you have to realize if you're going to criticize CNN is very often the field reporters have reported something very accurately, and they filed that report, and then by the time it works its way through the various editors and producers and it finally makes its way onto television, it may not even resemble the report they filed. It happens, and I know for sure that happens, because we've been told by journalists who have been on this show, not necessarily specifically CNN, but journalists who have been on the show that have told us about things like that happening with their reports. So we know it happens. The same thing happens with people who work at NASA. The same thing happens. We talk about the government. Well, it's not everybody that works for the government. The vast majority of the people who work for the government are decent, honest people. But by the time things go through all of the filters and funnels and come out on the other end as an official policy or statement, it very often does not resemble the work product of these very decent, honest people. It very often resembles more the wishes, wants, and desires of the politicians who are formulating the policies, rather than the will of the people or the product, the work product of the people in the government that produce things for them. And that happens at NASA. Sometimes people from NASA speak to the public and say something. They leak a little bit of truth to us. They just say it, and it gets reported that one time, and then you don't ever see or hear that person again talking about that. Some other scientist, some other spokesperson for NASA steps in, and the whole thing gets redirected, and a whole different kind of conclusion comes out. Now, a good example of that was the chief scientist on the IRIS satellite, the chief scientist for that project. And I can't actually remember his name, but I do remember it's kind of a German-sounding name, like Neuberger or something like that. And I do apologize to him if he's listening. I apologize to his family. I'm just pulling this out of the top of my head here, and I don't have the notes for that in front of me. But back in 1982, in a press conference talking about what the IRIS satellite had found, he said, "We have found something out there that is huge. We don't know what it is yet, but it's gigantic." And that was reported, and you know that story was picked up and reported, and it went on the wire. A few newspapers around the country reported it. They printed it, and that was it. You haven't heard any more about that. So sometimes these NASA scientists, you know, they just tell us the truth, and then someone at NASA decides you didn't need to know that truth, and they squelch it. And that's what I'm talking about. You know, there are some good, honest, decent, super, super brilliant scientists working for NASA that do produce honest work and do tell us the truth when they get a chance. But by the time their work product goes through all the filters and funnels and comes out on the other end as an official statement from NASA, it very often does not resemble what those scientists would say if they could say it to us. So while we have some scientists that do bring us the truth, some of the official statements, many, and here lately perhaps most, of the official statements from NASA are a little bit less than truthful, maybe a lot less than truthful in some cases. Now, I'm going to present to you two NASA people, three, I guess, NASA people tonight. I'm really presenting two, but there is a third one that cannot be ignored. He's part of the first story. And so he'll be included in the first story. And in this first story, it's the story of somebody really important. It's the story of a scientist that was respected by everyone. He was considered a tower, a pillar. And yet, if you try to find detailed information about his background, you try to find detailed information, you know, about his curriculum vitae, and or perhaps just a pretty good biography of him, it's very difficult to find information on this guy. And you can find information pretty readily, but it's really surface stuff. It's not much. And I find that to be pretty strange, but at the same time predictable, and you are going to discover why. His name is Dr. Harold P. Klein. He's a Mars scientist. He is the father of astrobiology. He was the chief biologist on the Viking lander missions, and he was the head of the Life Sciences Division at Ames Research Center. Now, what you can find about Dr. Harold Klein, you can find that Dr. Harold Klein was the head of the Life Sciences Division at Ames Research Center. You can find that Dr. Harold Klein was has been inducted into the Ames Research Center Hall of Fame. You can find that he died at 80 years of age, I believe in 2001, and that he was highly respected by everyone at Ames Research Center. Beyond that, it's very difficult to find much about him. Dr. Harold Klein actually became interested in what is called astrobiology or exobiology, biology that's not on this planet, biology out there. He got interested in that as a result of one of his graduate students when he was at Berkeley. He was at Berkeley University. One of his students just sort of bubbled over with a report to him about having heard a series of talks by Carl Sagan, in which Carl Sagan talked about the prospects for extraterrestrial life. Klein later moved to Brandeis University and researched the possible biochemical processes which might be displayed by life on other planets. And then he heard from one of his colleagues that Ames Research Center was looking for someone to head its new exobiology division. He applied for the job and he got it. Later he was promoted by Smith DeFrance to lead the life sciences division, which is like the next step up. So this is an important guy. This is a serious scientist. Now, the reason that I've chosen to share information with you this evening about Dr. Harold P. Klein is not only because of the fact that we are, I think, right on the verge of an announcement. NASA's been making noises now for about 2 or 3 years where they're just getting a little bit closer and just, you know, a centimeter closer each time. They're just getting a little closer to saying, we found life out there. I mean, they're so close, they could spit and hit it. And this is the brainchild. This is the work. This was the mission, the goal of Dr. Harold P. Klein. And so you need to know about him. He's the one who really got this ball rolling. And when NASA finally makes that announcement, which they have to soon, I predict they'll do that sooner rather than later. I don't think they can hold back much longer. But when they do that, we need to know that in the beginning of this process, it was the work of Harold P. Klein. It was his passion. It was his vision. And it was him recruiting scores of super talented scientists to come to Ames Research Center and work on this. And so he needs to get the credit for it. But there are other reasons. There are other reasons. Why isn't there more information about Dr. Harold Klein? Why isn't the internet just overflowing with information about Dr. Klein? What is it that has caused the information to go scarce? Would you believe that my answer to that is the planet Mars? The planet Mars is responsible. Now, here's why. In 1969, Congress approved a mission that we know as the Viking Lander mission. And actually, there were two Viking spacecraft. They were launched about a week apart. But the Viking Lander mission had on board an experiment package, a package that Dr. Harold Klein had really pushed to get on the Viking Lander. And that experiment was designed by Dr. Gilbert Levin. Dr. Gilbert Levin invented the science package on board the Viking Lander that discovered organics and oxygen in the soil of Mars. You've heard me talk about this. This experiment, this science package, was first designed not for space. It was first designed for looking for various types of toxic biotics in drinking water and water in which people swim. Dr. Levin was a civil scientist. He was in charge of seeing to the safety of the drinking water in a city and so forth. And so he invented this process. He invented this machinery. He invented the science that goes with it. And he talked to people at NASA about this, and they were excited about it. And he said, I hear you've got a mission going to Mars. And he said, I've got something that I think if there is life, if there's biology happening on Mars, I think it can probably discover it. So they gave him a telephone number over at Ames Research Center, and he goes over there, or calls over there, talks to them. And in the process of time, took about a year. Remember, the Viking lander was in 1976, but it got approved in 1969. These things don't happen fast. But anyway, it got approved, and it was on board the Viking lander. And when the Viking landers landed, boy, it was big news. Because these were the first to land, first human-made spacecraft to land on Mars. Crash into Mars, yes. Land on Mars, the first. And so it started taking pictures of Mars up close. Not from space, right down there on the surface, and that was exciting. Of course, NASA doctored the pictures and made all the skies red. But nevertheless, there we were. We were on Mars. Big, big, exciting stuff. Well, then the time came for the Gil Levin science package to reach out and grab some dirt. And it did. And it dumped the little soil sample into the science package. And the science package did what it's supposed to do. And when it did what it was supposed to do, it shocked the scientists back here on Earth. I mean, it shocked the scientists. One of the scientists said, we can't say for sure that that's biology yet, but what we can say is that's exactly what we expect biology to be doing. They were shocked because that science package told them that there very likely was a biological process going on there. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we are talking about some really, really important scientists who happened to be working for NASA. And Dr. Gilbert Levin did not work for NASA, but he did design the science package that NASA put on board Viking Lander. And as I said, his science package discovered some things that really had the Viking lander scientists in a buzz. And that included, of course, Dr. Harold P. Klein, because he was the chief biologist for the Viking lander. He was head of the exobiology or astrobiology team working the science packages on the Viking lander. Now, that's important because I'm going to play for you something else they found. I'm going to play for you a recording of Dr. Harold Klein. Many of you have heard it. Now, I want to warn you. I don't know why, because I have edited this sound clip. I have edited down to the minimum volume where it there's still some audio there. And yet when it plays at maximum volume, and I don't know why. So you maybe want to, maybe you'll want to turn down your radio or your computer just for a moment. But here goes. This is Dr. Harold Klein talking about something else they discovered from the Gil Levin science package on the Viking lander.
What we have found, in fact, is something like 15 times as much oxygen in that atmosphere as we can account for from known sources.
Now, that's important. That is very important, because the published NASA statement about the conditions on Mars says that the atmosphere of Mars contains 0.7% oxygen. Now, here on Earth, depending on where you are, it ranges from 17 to 20, maybe 21% in some places. At Mars, they say it's less than 1%. It's not 7%, it's 0.7. That's less than 1%. So the scientists did not expect to find that Martian dirt was loaded with oxygen. And when you pour water on it and hit it with a little energy, it releases oxygen. And what did he say? What we found is that there was 15 times, not 15%, 15 times more oxygen than we can account for, he said, in that atmosphere. And in that atmosphere, I take to mean in the atmosphere of inside that science experiment. What we found was 15 times more oxygen in that atmosphere than we can account for from all known sources. So what did he just tell us? He just told us that the conditions on Mars are far different than they suspected. But what NASA has published is what they suspected. If you go to NASA's website today, you will still find the same information today about the makeup of the Martian atmosphere as was published back then, 0.7%. Now, you might say, well, okay, but that's the Martian atmosphere. And what Dr. Klein is talking about is what was released from the dirt. You're right. You're right. But you know how they always tell us that it never rains on Mars? And they tell us that any precipitation would evaporate before it gets to the surface because the Martian atmosphere is so thin? You know how they tell us that there cannot be, and there never is, liquid water at the surface? They tell us that you can have ice, but not liquid water. Because the instant that it warms up enough for some of that ice to melt, according to NASA, the atmosphere is so thin that it goes straight to vapor. No liquid water. That's what they tell us. Now, you know, that ought to be a little bit glaring if you use logic. Because in order for the ice to get there to start with, there had to be liquid water. Vapor doesn't become ice. Now, you can have frozen water vapor that becomes a very thin dusting of little ice crystals on a surface. You can have that. But you don't get sheets and thick layers of ice like Mars has. You don't get that without liquid. It's got to be liquid sometime. So, Dr. Harold Klein is telling us that there was 15 times more oxygen than what they could account for from all known sources. In other words, when they did all of their science before they actually went to Mars with the Viking lander, they did all of their theoretical suppositions and did all their modeling for what Mars was like. They could not figure out that oxygen may one time have been very plentiful on Mars, and if so, may be stored somehow in the dirt. It surprised them. They didn't know that. Well, they found in the Levin experiment, they found signs of possible biological activity. That's specifically what that science experiment was designed to do. And so everybody was excited about it. And at the time, there were headlines that, you know, they may have found life on Mars and so forth. But within hours, all the headlines changed because NASA said, well, we don't think that that's quite right. We think maybe it's not life. It's not biology. So we're going to run another experiment. And they did. But the other experiment was not designed specifically. It was another science package. Was not designed specifically to look for signs of biological processes. And since it wasn't designed to find any, it did exactly what it was supposed to do, and it didn't find any. And so NASA came out with, we just think that first experiment was not calibrated right. It was a mistake. There's no life on Mars. For a very long time now, since then, Dr. Gilbert Levin and a few other scientists have been looking at that data. They've been going over it again and again and again. And they say there was no mistake. It was not miscalibrated. It found signs of biological processes on Mars. Okay, so now we have he said, she said, right? Well, then, in August 2007, as a matter of fact, August the 4th, 2007, a rocket took off, headed to Mars, and on top of that rocket was something called the Phoenix Lander. Now, remember, 1976, Viking Lander found copious amounts of oxygen in the dirt. And signs of biological processes. So, now here we are in 2007, whole bunch of years later. And what happens in 2007 is the Phoenix lander lands near the North Pole of Mars, fairly close. And what it's going to do is scoop up dirt using not Dr. Gil Levin's science package, but another science package called TEGA, T-E-G-A. It's going to scoop up some dirt, dump it into the TEGA experiment, in TEGA package, which is a little oven. TEGA's going to heat it up to various degrees. And there are sensors in there that are going to sort of sniff the gases that come off of that dirt and determine what the composition is. Now, what are they looking for? They're looking for signs of organics. So they're not looking for biological processes. They're looking for signs of organics. In other words, the type of organic material that living things would need in order to be living. So you probably remember. They had a little problem because the ground was so hard and frozen. They had a little problem getting it to scoop up any dirt. But it did, finally. And it dumped it into its little oven. And guess what it found? Copious amounts of oxygen. Copious amounts of oxygen. Just like the Viking lander had found. And when they looked at the soil composition based on the TIGA experiment, it caused Dr. Peter Smith at the University of Arizona in Tucson, Arizona, who was running that project, it caused him to say, that dirt is just like the dirt in your backyard. You could probably grow asparagus in it. Within a very few hours of him making that statement, which, by the way, that means, yes, there's organics in it, and they found tons of oxygen. I'll get back to the finding oxygen in just a moment. So that happened. But within hours of him saying that, articles came out. I mean, like within a couple of hours, maybe 4 or 5 hours. Articles started hitting the news media where you had other scientists saying, oh, no, what we found was perchlorate. And perchlorate is toxic, and that would probably preclude life. It would make it difficult for life to be there. Some of you remember that day. You remember that day because you were listening to the Kevin Smith Show. And you remember that I went on the air that night with that story and ate their lunch on the perchlorate thing. Not only did I do that, I showed you, those who were watching our video feed, I showed you the charts from the TIGA experiment. And the charts from the TIGA experiment showed a huge spike for oxygen and not even a blip for chlorine. Well, in order to have perchlorate, you have to have chlorine. The TIGA experiment did not find any chlorine, not one bit. More on perchlorate when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we are talking about how NASA tells us the truth and doesn't. Dr. Harold Klein told us the truth. Dr. Peter Smith told us the truth. But within hours of Dr. Peter Smith telling us the truth, articles came out saying that there was perchlorate in that soil. And that that would likely preclude any life. And that night, on the Kevin Smith Show, that night, I went on the air and ate their lunch. You may remember that. I ate their lunch by showing the TIGA charts that showed only oxygen and no chlorine. Those charts were available on the internet. I have looked for them many times since then and can't find them. Maybe they're still there, but I can't find them. I looked for them all day today and could not find them. But they were available that night, and I showed them to you. And in order for you to have perchlorate, you have to have oxygen and chlorine. And there was no chlorine. So, the next thing I did that night was I shared with you information about perchlorate. Perchlorate exists in the soil and or water in 27 of our 50 states. That's more than half. Does it preclude life in those 27 states? In other words, does perchlorate make it impossible for life to exist in those 27 states? No. Well, the next morning, other articles came out where you had NASA scientists sort of backing up and saying, well, it wouldn't necessarily preclude life. Since then, they've actually come out and said perchlorate might be used as an energy source for life. So they got backed into a corner. I wasn't the only one, but I was one of them. I wasn't the only person that hit them between the eyes with the facts. And when they got hit between the eyes with the facts and they knew that the public was not going to buy this, they had to back up and punt. Dr. Peter Smith was right. Dr. Harold Klein was right. Now, where did they come up with this perchlorate stuff? Where did they get that? Well, according to them, watch this. It's very, very interesting the way they handled this. According to NASA, TIGA did not come up with perchlorate. But another experiment called the MECA, M-E-C-A, came up with, it's designed to check for isotopes of certain things, especially certain salts like perchlorate. And so the MECA experiment had detected some perchlorate. Very small amount, but it detected it. And so the next day, after all the furor hit about perchlorate, and then the furor hit about it will not preclude life, and by the way, the TIGA experiment didn't find any perchlorate. So the next day, what did they do? They had the TIGA experiment to scoop up some more dirt from the same trench that they had dug before, and they call it the Snow White Trench. And so there we see where the Phoenix lander dug up twice, scooped up some dirt, and put it into the TIGA experiment. Well, it put it into the TIGA experiment, and specifically now they're paying attention. Specifically now they're going to be looking to see if they come up with any perchlorate. And again, TIGA said there was no perchlorate. So the MECA experiment said there was. TIGA twice said there was not. Now, why is that important? I want you to pay attention to what NASA did here, because this is what I'm talking about with NASA being deceptive. Back in 1976, when the Gil-Levin package on board of the Viking lander came up with its data, NASA got nervous because that data said it was almost conclusive, yes, there's life on Mars. And NASA got nervous and they ran another experiment. The other experiment did not come up with the same results. Wasn't designed to, but it didn't come up with the same results. And so NASA threw out the Gil-Levin experiment and went with the one that didn't get the same results, the one that failed to see the biological processes. So you have one that gets biological processes, and they throw it away in favor of one that didn't get biological processes. Now we come to 2007. So here we are in 2007, and what happens? TIGA does not come up with perchlorate. It just comes up with the same oxygen spike and organics that Gil Levin came up with. They run another experiment, just like they did with the Viking lander. Now remember, TIGA didn't get perchlorate. So they run an experiment that does. TIGA is run again. It still doesn't show perchlorate. Okay, which one do they throw out? TIGA. Sort of. Because today they are still publishing the fact, or publishing as a fact, that the Martian soil has perchlorate in it. You know, it's deceptive. It's deceptive. TIGA twice checked for what's in the soil and did not come up with perchlorate. It did come up with a lot of oxygen. But you see, the perchlorate issue takes your mind off of the oxygen, doesn't it? The perchlorate takes your mind off of the organics. The argument that there's perchlorate in the soil and this might be a problem for life on Mars, all of that takes your mind away from the fact that Dr. Peter Smith said that dirt is just like the dirt in your backyard. You could probably grow asparagus in it. That's a quote. He said that. But it takes our mind away from that. But it also takes our minds away from something else. It takes our minds away from NASA getting caught by the Phoenix lander in a lie. NASA has been telling us, and they still tell us, that the Martian atmosphere is so thin that there can be no liquid water at the surface. And the Phoenix lander caught them lying. The Phoenix lander took a series of photographs with the camera pointed right down at the ground, and one of the legs of the Phoenix lander is visible in that photograph. And over a period of time, as it took a series of pictures, they watched as water droplets formed on the leg of the lander. Now that's setting on the surface. That's as, you know, you get any more to the surface, you're in the dirt. There's water drops on that leg, and they watched in the pictures as those water drops built up and then began to trickle down the leg. Liquid water at the surface. That means the atmosphere is not what they've been telling us. More when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. Sorry you missed the first hour. You missed a lot of information, but we're glad you're here now. Now, folks, we're going in this hour to move into the story of another person related to NASA. But before we do that, I want to wrap up with what we've been talking about. I want to make sure you understand the importance of that photograph taken by the Phoenix lander. Photograph that's pointed, the camera's pointed towards the ground, and there's the leg of the Phoenix lander very prominently in that picture. They took a series of pictures watching that leg, and they watched water droplets form on it. And, you know, every so often it would snap another picture. and they watched as those water droplets moved position and finally trickled down the leg. And that means, of course, they were gaining mass. They were getting larger. So you have condensation into liquid water right there at ground level. What does that mean? Let me say it again. It means that what they've been telling us about the atmosphere conditions on Mars, what they've been telling us is not true. Now, is it a lie? Well, let's say they really didn't know until they had this picture. Maybe they thought they were right until they had this series of pictures. And so we could then say, well, what they've been telling us is inaccurate. But they're still telling it, and that makes it a lie. Because their own evidence shows that you can have liquid water. And in fact, they found that there was water in that soil that they scooped up and put into the TIGA experiment. There was H2O in the dirt. It was wet. And here we have liquid water at the surface where they tell us you can't have it. Now, it's one thing to be inaccurate. That's okay. You know, you did your best, you made your best guess, and you're a little bit off. That's okay. But when you keep telling that story after the evidence is in, that's a lie. This is the sort of thing, Ellis, that I'm talking about. NASA needs to stop lying to us. They have also provided us with, for instance, photographs of the moon where they've airbrushed out, and you can see that they have airbrushed out. They did a sloppy job of it, but you can see where they airbrushed out. Buildings, towers, roadways. You can see that in their pictures. Therefore, that is intentional deception. That's a lie. This is the sort of thing I'm talking about. Now, I'm very much pro-NASA when we're talking about NASA doing what their stated mission is. When they really do it, and maybe they are, but when they come back with nonsense like this that we've been talking about here tonight, they come back to us with this kind of nonsense, that's a lie. And they need to stop lying to the people who own them. They need to stop lying to their employers. That's us. They need to stop it. They need to start telling the truth. And they need to know that there are people like me all over the place that catch them in these lies repeatedly. And nobody believes them anymore. If they want to return to being the national pride, if they want to return to being, you know, sort of the star at the top of the tree, they have to start acting like it. That's what I'm talking about, Ellis. Now, I want to move to the story of the story. This person that we're going to be talking about is one of the most brilliant people on this planet. He is a true Renaissance man. And his name is Story Musgrave. Story Musgrave was born in 1935 in Massachusetts. Born and raised on a dairy farm. By the time he was 3 years old, he was out in the forests around the farm alone, and by five, he was floating his home-built rafts on the rivers. He rode combines at five, drove trucks and tractors on the farm at 10, and when he was alone in the remote fields, he repaired them by the time he was 13. One of the most amazing things about this guy is that he never finished school. He ran off to Korea with the U.S. Marines, where he was an aircraft electrician and an engine mechanic He started flying with the Marines, and over the next 55 years, accumulated 18,000 hours in over 150 craft. He is a parachutist with over 800 free falls. Are you ready for this? He now has 7 graduate degrees. Yep, the guy that didn't finish school. He now has 7 graduate degrees in math, computers, chemistry, medicine, physiology, literature, and psychology. He has been awarded 20 honorary doctorates. And he was a part-time trauma surgeon during his 30-year astronaut career. He was an astronaut, as I said, for over 30 years. He flew on 6 space flights. He performed the first shuttle spacewalk on Challenger's first flight. He was a pilot on the astronomy mission, conducted 2 classified DOD missions, was the lead spacewalker on the Hubble Space Telescope repair mission, and on his last flight, he operated an electronic chip manufacturing satellite on Columbia. These days, he operates a palm farm in Orlando, Florida, a production company in Sydney, Australia, a sculpture company in Burbank, California. He is also a landscape architect, a concept artist with Walt Disney Imagineering, an innovator with Applied Minds Incorporated, a professor of design at the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, California, and he also performs multimedia presentations on topics such as vision, leadership, motivation, safety, quality, innovation, creativity, design, simplicity, beauty, and ecology. He is truly a Renaissance man, wouldn't you say? This guy is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. All of the astronauts are brilliant. They really are. You don't get to be an astronaut if you're a dummy. You really have to be sharp. He is brilliant. And maybe we could say he outshines most of the rest in that department. Story Musgrave is one of the people most open-minded and outspoken about forms of life we know nothing about, the possibility of extraterrestrial life, and where we need to go, where we need to get to here on Earth as we reach out to the universe. I want to read something to you he wrote in a college paper back in 1990. Are you ready? While a true perception and experience of spaceflight requires a new consciousness and vision, it simultaneously provides a unique environment which may be used to facilitate enriched states of mind. Floating in the dark, drifting off to sleep, without knowing where one is over the Earth, or where the Earth is, or even the position of the enclosing spacecraft around you, without touching any object, without any orientating anchor, is a magical, magnificent condition in which to achieve the totally serene, silent mind. In a physiological sense, the body relates only to itself. It is not standing in a line, not sitting at a desk, not lying on a beach of sand. It's just there. It just is. If our actions in the free fall, zero gravity of space are forced to be Earth-like, because not to be Earth-like is a threat to stability, we will never grasp the reality of spaceflight. We need to be conscious of ourselves as creatures of space, as well as of the Earth, if we are to be natural and comfortable doing things in zero gravity in a way fitting to zero gravity, not to ambulation on Earth. So he wrote a number of things about how it's necessary to have a complete change of our consciousness and the way we think about things in order to really be the space-faring people we could be. Story Musgrave's a deep thinker. Story Musgrave has his mind wide open to possibilities. Now, some of you have seen, especially if you've spent much time on YouTube looking at videos of UFOs that have been filmed by NASA astronauts. You've seen some that Story Musgrave has filmed. Now, one is, and I will kind of qualify what he says about this in just a moment, but one of those videos, very interesting, because it's like a space snake, or as he calls it, an eel. It's just this very long, big, white, tubular thing in space, and it's just undulating along like a snake. Have you seen that? Well, that's Story Musgrave. That was in, I think that was STS-80. He has seen discs. He has seen these space snakes, space eels. Now, what he says about that is that he has never seen anything in space that indicates to him that it is of extraterrestrial intelligence. But he goes on to say that, number one, there are so many life forms, even right here, that we don't know anything about. And he says we need to find out about them. So I take it from that, that he thinks this space snake is really something that's from Earth, that's here. You and I don't see it because we're not out there in space. But I take it to mean that he thinks that's something that is of Earth environment. But he goes on to say, number two, that there is no question but that there are intelligent extraterrestrial civilizations scattered throughout the universe. Now, he was speaking at a conference. He was doing an astronomy presentation at a conference, and you know, you had some members of the public, you had scientists, you had, you know, a crowd there. And he's speaking, and the last slide he puts up is a slide of a gray extraterrestrial, or EB. And he makes this comment: these guys are real, I guarantee it. And that was the end of the presentation. So Story Musgrave is one of the people from NASA who has stepped forward unashamedly. He stepped forward and said, you know, it's ridiculous to think we're alone. These guys are real. And I've seen things in space you can't explain. Now, he does say that he hasn't seen anything that's convinced him, the things he's seen, that they were of intelligent extraterrestrial origin. But he thinks that such things do exist. He says that he thinks for sure that there are extraterrestrial civilizations perhaps a billion years ahead of us in terms of their advancement. And he talks very openly about that. So in answer to Ellis's email, I didn't design this show to answer his email, but it does. But in answer to Ellis's email that I read to you at the beginning of the show, Ellis, this is one of the people that I'm talking about when I say that there are people at NASA that want you to know the truth. There are people at NASA that try to tell us the truth and that do tell us the truth. But then you have the official statements that come out, and that's, you know, after the work product has gone through all of the filters and all the politics and all of the spooks looking at it and deciding what you can say and what you can't say, the official statement comes out at the other end of the funnel. And it's very, very different from even their own evidence. And I say about that, come on, NASA. Why don't you just give it up? You want us to give up the money. Why don't you just give up the truth? You give us the truth, you get the money. I think it'll work that way. But there are a great many people at NASA, like Dr. Harold Klein, like Story Musgrave, and there are others. You know, Gordon Cooper talked about extraterrestrials and UFOs, having seen them. We've got a sound clip I want to play for you. This is from the shuttle, on a shuttle mission. Listen carefully, and this one may be real loud too. I don't know what it is with these files, but I can edit them down and adjust them down so that they are at the bare minimum of audio. And when I broadcast them, they play at full audio. I don't know why. Nothing else, none of the other files do that, but here we go.
Houston, this is Discovery. We still have the alien spacecraft under observance.
You hear that? Let me play that for you again.
Houston, this is Discovery. We still have the alien spacecraft under observance.
We still have the alien spacecraft under observance. So there are people out there that work for NASA that get us the truth. Little bits of it, but they get it to us as they can. And Story Musgrave certainly is one of those people. Man, I'd love to have him on the show. And, you know, he's one of the most experienced of the astronauts in terms of the number of missions he flew. And in addition to that, he's one of the most brilliant among the astronauts, who are all brilliant. He's one of the most brilliant. And when someone like this steps up and says, you know something? These guys are real. I guarantee it. You compare that to these gumshoe skeptobunkers that go on television and go on radio and they and they ridicule and they mock and they talk about you know, how foolish it is to think that there are extraterrestrials, to think that there are UFOs and they do that in the face of somebody like Dr. Harold Klein and Story Musgrave. Now, set them side by side in your mind, compare them, and ask yourself which one deserves for you to say, yeah, I think this guy's the one telling the truth. You have to make your own mind up about that. You've got to come to your own decisions about that. There is a dedicated cadre out there of people with mental road rash. There's a dedicated cadre of these fools doing nothing but belching and vomiting nonsense all over the place when it comes to UFOs and when it comes to extraterrestrial life. People that can't even spell space are doing that in the face of someone like Story Musgrave and Dr. Harold Klein. You set these guys on the balances. Take your pick, you know, pick your favorite debunker and put him on one side over here. And take your pick, Harold Klein or Story Musgrave, put him over here. And which one has more weight in my mind, it's going to be Harold Klein or Story Musgrave. Well, the one with the most weight has the most value. That's the way it works. Why would you believe Bill Nye, the science guy, and his blithering nonsense about extraterrestrials and UFOs? Why would you believe a guy like that in the face of Story Musgrave? Why would you believe a guy like that in the face of Dr. Harold Klein? I mean, the real experts. You know, not the pretend experts, the real experts. If you're sitting out there listening to this show, perhaps for the first time, maybe you've listened several times, but you're one of those people, you say, well, you know, I kind of like the show, and it's kind of interesting sometimes, but, you know, all this UFO stuff and extraterrestrial stuff, I think that's just nonsense. Okay, let's put you on the scales. Why would you think you're right in the face of someone like Story Musgrave? Why would you think you're right in the face of someone like Dr. Harold Klein? Why? What is it about you that makes you more of an expert than these guys are? These are the real, real, genuine experts, folks. These are the people. Look, Harold Klein invented astrobiology. Harold Klein is the person that made astrobiology happen. So why would you think, if you've never even been to space, you've never controlled a science mission that landed on another planet, you've never done any of that, but you know more than Harold Klein. Why would you think that? Does that make sense to you? It may be that emotionally you feel like, well, I just can't bring myself to believe that. Well, you don't have to believe it. You can know exactly what Harold Klein says and then just compare it to what you actually know about Mars. Not what you feel about it. What do you know about it? You might say, well, I just can't bring myself to believe that there's extraterrestrials out there. Okay. That's an emotional statement. Believe is all about emotion. Believe is faith. It's religion. But what you can know is what Story Musgrave says, what astronaut Gordon Cooper says, what astronaut Blaha said, you just heard it, still have the alien spacecraft under observance. You can know what astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell says. And then you got to ask yourself, is what you feel more real than what they know? They've been there. Is what you feel more important, and is it more real than what these real experts are telling us? Are your emotions about this more real and more important than what the real experts are telling us about it? Because real experts are telling us there's life out there, it's intelligent, they are millions to billions of years ahead of us, and they visit you. That's what the real experts tell us. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. A little bit more about Story Musgrave. How serious is this guy when he says, I guarantee these people are real? He's talking about these extraterrestrials. He said it in front of a group gathered for an astronomy presentation. He put up as his last slide a picture of what we commonly call a gray. And when he did that, he ended his presentation by saying, "These guys are real. I guarantee it." How serious is he about that? Dr. Musgrave has stated in an interview that he attempted to communicate with ET life forms during every one of his six missions. Every one of his six space flights, he attempted to communicate with extraterrestrial life forms. And he said that he actually asked them to take him with them. Pretty courageous, isn't it? What do you think about the real experts? You see, the real experts are not timid. The real experts are not shy about talking about this. They are sometimes measured in how they say things, but they say it. So what if all of NASA were turned loose to be free to speak like Story Musgrave? See, he's no longer there. He retired after STS-80. Oh, and by the way, during the break I checked, that space worm, that space snake, that was not STS-80. I don't know the number on that one. Look it up. You'll see it on the internet, on YouTube. I'm not sure STS what number. But anyway, that was Story Musgrave that filmed that. And he talks about it in interviews. You'll find interviews on the YouTube about it. He talks about it. But in STS-80, what they saw was a big disc that just suddenly appeared from nowhere. And the outside rim of this thing appeared to be turning rotating in a clockwise fashion. Now, put these guys in the balance. Here you've got astronauts, space scientists, astrobiologists, the father of astrobiology, saying this stuff is real, folks. And then you've got others that are saying, no, 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 it's not real. Understand, the people that are saying it's not real, generally speaking, they are people who are earthbound. They've never been into space. They've never worked in astrobiology. They've never done anything related to the real science of space, most of them. Some of these people that say it's not real, especially if they work at NASA, you know, they're smart. They are related to the space program, but they're in there in NASA with a faction saying it's not real. But they are not the ones who've been in space either, are they? Now, what I want to do is I'd like to know what you think about what I've presented to you here tonight. Some of it you've heard before, because I've played Dr. Harold Klein's clip before, and I've played the one from the space shuttle, you know, where they say we still have the alien spacecraft under observance. I've played that for you before. And, you know, there's another one. Ask yourself, here's an astronaut who says, Houston, we still have, this is Discovery, we still have the alien spacecraft under observance. What is this astronaut drunk? You know, to be an astronaut, you have to be the cream of the crop. These guys are brilliant. So there you have an astronaut on Discovery, the shuttle Discovery, and he's saying, we still have the alien spacecraft under observance. What is he drunk? Has he lost his mind? Maybe he's got space psychosis or something. What do you think? So all the arguments for it's not real, all the arguments, from my point of view, all the arguments for it's imagination, people have been reading too much too many novels, have been watching too many sci-fi movies. It's just their imagination. That is such stupidity, in my opinion. It is my opinion. I think it's really stupid. I mean, that's even worse than being a mushroom. That's having your head stuffed so far up your rear that you haven't seen daylight in years. You know, that's completely throwing all the evidence out. And look at the evidence. We're talking about the people who actually go out there in space, see and experience these things, and come back and tell us about it. And this is why there's a video of me that you've seen. It's on YouTube. It's also in our video galaxy. And it says, "Do you believe in UFOs? Flatulent minds want to know." And I say in that video, the question, "Do you believe in UFOs?" is the stupidest question you can ask. There's nothing to believe. They either exist or they don't. And the people who have been out there have seen them, have filmed them, have radioed Houston from space and said, "We still have the alien spacecraft under observance." These people, the ones who should know, do know, and they say it's real. And I'm persuaded they're far more of an expert on this than I am. There's nothing to believe. They either exist or they don't. And those people have provided the proof, the evidence, they do exist. But anyway, I'd like to know what you think about what I'm talking about here tonight. Maybe you think I'm completely off my rocker here. And if so, you need to call me and tell me I'm off my rocker. I'll try to get back on. But here's the telephone number, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Toll free from the United States and Canada, 888-223-4599. Let me give it to you again, 888-223-4599. Now, if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I do not have a international toll-free number, but I do have the flash message option on the website. And the flash message option on the website allows you to send me your thoughts and send me your comments, and I'll address them on the air. Now, I've got one here from Mick in the United Kingdom, and it says, "Hi, Kevin, you seem to have gremlins tonight. You're cutting out mid-sentence and going to music, then coming back, and it's not your ad break. Perhaps the powers that be don't like tonight's topic, but I do, and it relates to the Dark Mission book I'm reading at the moment. And NASA are definitely covering up a lot of Mars truths and the moon. Great show as usual." Well, what that would mean, of course, is that someone is interrupting the radio feed. And I don't know which radio feed he's listening to. So I don't know which station he's tuned into. But someone may be interrupting it. And if they are interrupting it, then, there's nothing that we can do on this end. I will tell you that on this end, they're not interrupting it here. Okay? In other words, it is getting from here to our server, and then from our server to you somewhere it may be getting interrupted. 623-444-5889. Come on, have the courage that it takes to move your fingers and punch the numbers. Give us a call and let's see what you think about this. Are you afraid of this topic? Is that it? Are you afraid of it? You're scared of it? Are you scared of the fact that real experts unabashedly say it's true? Here's somebody that's not afraid. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Dave from Southwest Nevada.
Hello, Dave from Southwest Nevada. How are you?
I have been sitting here listening to your entire show absolutely spellbound.
Why have you been spellbound?
Because you're bringing up things that I have read about that no one else I know of has ever touched.
Well, it can be a bit of a hot potato, you understand.
What's hot about flying saucers? They're real.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, when you have people like Harold Klein telling us, you know what, the conditions on Mars are not what NASA's telling you. He didn't use those words. He said we found 15 times more oxygen than we can account for from all known sources. And what that means is the conditions on Mars are not what NASA's been telling you. That's pretty significant. And I'll tell you something, Dave. I got that sound clip off of the internet about 3 years ago. Try to find it on the internet now. You can't.
It's not there.
It's not there. The Kevin has it, but the internet doesn't. At least I couldn't find it.
Nor do they tell you the fact that Mars doesn't have a red sky. It has a blue sky.
Yeah, you know why?
And they have clouds.
Oh, yeah. And there's rain. And there's snowfall.
And there's water.
And yes, there is.
And there's people and creatures and plants.
Well, I'm not going to dispute that, but I have to admit, I haven't seen pictures of people on Mars, but I have seen pictures that dang sure look like a big pine forest.
Yes. And tunnels to channel the water away.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there was a story I read many years ago in 1942 where the Germans had sent their flying craft to Mars and established a base. Now, I have yet to find anything about that again, and I have searched diligently for that.
I also have read that, and it was several years ago. But I have read that. I'm familiar with that story. And, they were apparently, according to that story, established a base. And I have read stories that I haven't seen on the internet for some time now, but they used to be there, of, our base on Mars, that we have one. There are stories out there that we and the Russians have a joint base on the moon, and that actually it was there when Apollo arrived.
That's interesting because I watched a thing by Kevin Collins, 12 series, it's a 12 thing on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
He has some very compelling photographs that prove that there are bases on Mars. And it's on YouTube.
I don't know if you got to watch the show that I did with the pictures from the Pathfinder mission.
No, you know, I didn't.
Well, the Pathfinder mission, Dave, of course, was the very first rover we sent up there. And it was a little bitty guy. It wasn't very big. And it was the precursor to the Spirit and Opportunity rovers, but they were just testing technology. That's all they were doing. But they took a bunch of pictures, and there is a picture that it shot. Dave, can you hang on through this break?
You betcha.
All right, we'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and on the line with me is Dave from Southwest Nevada. Dave, I was saying, in that show that I did with about the Pathfinder mission, I showed a picture that Pathfinder took, and it's just a picture of Mars, and, you know, there's a horizon and a bunch of rocks between Pathfinder and the horizon. So you don't know how far away that horizon is because we don't know what the terrain is there. But it appears that what we think is the horizon is really sort of the top of a hill. And I was looking at that picture, and I could see a little, some kind of disturbance up there on the top of the hill. And so I started zooming in on it, and I zoomed in close. And when I zoomed in, it doesn't look like a building. It's a building. And it's got a dome on top, something like you would have on an observatory. And it's, you can see what looks like some kind of a, possibly an antenna tower, and possibly some kind of storage tank. You know, on a farm, they have what they call silos, which is just a big circular tube, and they put grain in it.
Yes, I'm aware of those.
That's what it looks like, sitting behind the building. And that's in the Mars Pathfinder picture. So there are incredible things out there on Mars. And, you know, when I showed this, I had people calling the show and I had people emailing the show the next 24 hours or so. It was one of those, oh my God moments. It was like, that's so clear. That's, I mean, it doesn't look like a building. That's a building out there. So there's all kinds of evidence like that, that Mars either is inhabited, which I think it is, or it has been inhabited. And, you know, keeping all that a secret, I mean, come on, what is this, a kid's game?
Doesn't that go back to the Brookings Institute study in 1964?
Well, I think some of it in the beginning, that's where it comes from. But now, you know, they can't claim that there's any validity to that report. And what was that, in the 60s? They can't claim that there's any validity to that report.
What they said there was, if they acknowledge the fact that there were flying saucers, who would suffer the most? The scientists.
Yeah, and that report does say they think there might be all kinds of mass suicides among scientists. Well,
that wouldn't be a bad thing, would it?
Hmm?
That wouldn't be a bad thing, would it?
Well, yeah, it would. But look, any scientist that's making his living by staunchly denying reality deserves to be out of business.
I could not agree with you more.
And, you know, I mean, this has become like a kid's game, you know. And, you know, when I've raised kids, and I've got one now. And there's sometimes they will do something they know they're not supposed to do. And you see them do it. And so then when you confront them with it, they say, I didn't do that. Yeah, you did. I saw you do it. No, I didn't. I didn't do that. That's what NASA's like right now.
Exactly right. They're like a spoiled child who's not getting their own way, and they're going to lie about everything to make themselves look good at someone else's expense.
Yeah, but the problem with that is we're the people that pay the bills. And their budget is diminishing. Their missions have been curtailed. One of their spokesmen in an interview finally admitted that when they end the shuttle program, it's going to be 10 years at the minimum. 10 years before we have a replacement craft.
Gee, they can use a TR-3B.
They may be. Who knows? You know, that TR-3B was... you're talking about the triangle.
Yeah.
Oh, what is that one called that looks like a little bitty space shuttle? That the Air Force...
That's that thing put up by Boeing, the space plane.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that thing was originally developed by NASA under contract with the Air Force. And it was developed so that it can carry a crew of two. Now, the Air Force says we're sending it up unmanned, and perhaps they are. But they don't have to. It can carry a crew of two.
Anything they tell me, I believe just the opposite of what they tell me.
You are cynical, Dave. You're cynical.
Me?
Yeah.
No, I'm just old and I've been around too long.
Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for the call. I do have to move along just in case somebody else wants to call us right before we end the show. And plus, I hear your wolves. All right. Talk to you later, Dave. Thanks for the call. Folks, we have time for one more call real quick if you want to make it. You know, I've shared with you tonight some of the information that's behind what I say about NASA needs to come clean with us. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Leslie. I'm calling from Oregon.
Hello, Leslie.
Well, I just wanted to call and say thank you, and I'm being very serious about this, but your show tonight is, I have a feeling it's going to make my life a little bit easier.
I hope so. How will it make your life easier?
Well, the next time I have someone who tries to debate whether or not ETs exist, or just, you know, life in general being out there,
mm-hmm.
What I'm going to want to do is pull up one of the K-Pods, have them listen to tonight's show, and then tell them after you listen to it, get back to me, and then we'll talk.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Well,
I do appreciate it.
Well, you're certainly welcome, and thanks for the call.
Thank you.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope it makes life easier. But, you know, it really, if you stop to think about this, especially if you yourself are one of these skeptibunkers, put yourself in the balance against the real experts and ask yourself, why should you believe you? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Jackie from Florida.
Hello, Jackie.
I, too, just wanted to let you know that I really enjoyed all the information. It was a really, really good two-hour talk, man. I don't know how you do it, but you do a great job.
Thank you very much.
And the information, like she said, it does give us ammunition when somebody is always going, you're in a circle of friends and your husband looks at you and go ahead, tell them about how you're not sure they went to the moon. Go ahead. Tell them how you think there's life on Mars. So good. I thank you.
Well, you're certainly welcome. Thank you.
Okay, I'll back out. Maybe somebody can jump in. Night, Kevin.
Good night. Well, I do hope the information is useful for you. I hope it's helpful for you. Because the real information from the real experts is, it blows away the skeptibunkers. I mean, all these people that are some kind of, sort of, maybe kind of self-appointed experts, these are the people who invented space in terms of exploration. These are the people that invented the science of astrobiology. The people who have flown in space, not once, six times in this case. A guy is so brilliant he didn't even have to finish school, you know, high school. So brilliant he didn't have to finish high school and still got 7 earned graduate degrees, including became a medical doctor. And has flown in space 6 times, has seen these things and filmed them. Yeah. Like I say, if you're one of the skeptibunkers, put yourself in the scales on the other side of one of these real experts. Where do you come out? I can tell you where you come out. When I watch you do it, when I put you in the scales and put them on the other side, I can tell you where you come out. You lost. These people know. It's not about believing. They know. And because they know and they share with us what they know and how they know it, then I can say, okay, that's reliable. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.